session number 10420, room 14.
Colonel W.I. Watson, Reel 14. What was your... You were about to move into brigade. What was your experience with the brigade?
I moved to brigade on the 2nd of September, I think, to, which was stationed at Wraxall Manor, to take over from Berylinius, the brigade major, for a couple of weeks whilst he was away on leave. Now, the first day I went there was merely... finding my way about. I learnt that all letters had to be shown to the brigadier. And the staff captain at that time was Willie Vane, who today is Lord Inglewood, who lives at Hutton in Forest over in Cumbria. And that was the sort of... I picked up the routine of... what happened at brigade headquarters. Now, on the 5th of September, there was a brigade exercise, and of course I had to attend with the brigadier, and the DLI functioned, and they did an attack onto the high ground round Yetminster. Now, it regrettably was a very poor show indeed. And the brigadier thought that Colonel Victor Yate had no grasp at all and was too old. That was his personal view. Mind, Victor Yate had only been a week with the battalion, so I think there was a certain grounds, for him finding it a little difficult. But anyhow... the brigadier thought it a poor show, and I must confess that I myself thought it wasn't very good. I know that afterwards I slipped into a public house and there found a Polish officer who'd just escaped from France and from incarceration somewhere in Poland, and he was really most interesting and most amusing. But I... on the whole, thought that this battalion exercise, brigade exercise, so far as the 6th Battalion, wasn't very good. Well, then I think the next day I parade and inspection. I must confess again, I found that there were a lot of people missing. I don't know what they were doing, but there were should have been far more on parade from brigade headquarters than there were. Then I think the next day would be about the 6th. I and the brigadier went to a very well-staged flame-fighting demonstration organised by, I think, Southern Command. But it was quite excellently done, and lo and behold, my old opposition, the smooth performer, was actually running it. And there was at the exercise to Tiny Gill, the old provost marshal who had been my companion in crime in France. And he was the DAPM, and we had been billeted together. So I had quite an enjoyable afternoon talking about old times and watching the smooth performer his staff. And there was, I think, an organization called the Petrol Warfare Unit, and they put it on. But it was a very good demonstration.
Can you recall what form the demonstration took?
Oh, well, yes. They put these flame-throwing guns onto carriers, And when they got to France, they put them onto bigger vehicles still when the invasion of Normandy took place. But eventually, after I'd finished fighting and at my school of infantry in Palestine, I had one of these things. And you pulled a trigger and a great, out of a sort of gun, a great spurt of flame came out, right, a great long one. And you could set a hedge row on fire and burn up grass and burn up any units that might be hiding in it. And that's what they showed us at this particular demonstration. Well, then afterwards it was over. The Brigadier and I called in at Lord Ilchester, Wraxall, and for a cup of tea. He was an old man, Lord Ilchester, and he told us that why he at one time had been coot shooting on the Abbotsford Swannery out of the mist and fog, a very large ship had driven ashore on the Chisel Beach because it was so dangerous and so deep, it dropped so sharply into very deep water. And I remember, too, the Brigadier saying that he'd be happy to take Lord Ilchester around the whole of the battalion front all along the Chisel Beach, and I subsequently warned him that he was an extremely old man and that probably wouldn't be able to walk from one end of the Chisel Beach to the other along the brigade front. Of course, the Brigadier could do it easily, and did, in fact. But then on the 7th of September came the code word Cromwell, which meant that an invasion was to take place. We'd already been warned, I think, by brigade headquarters that the invasion would take place from the 20th to the 24th or something like that. Anyhow, we got the scare Cromwell, and the 6th DLI moved out from Lytton Cheney to its battle headquarters on the reverse side of the knoll in the dugouts which we'd been digging. The brigade headquarters moved to the headquarters of the 6th DLI in Lytton Cheney. And I provided the brigadier with a mattress. I can't think where I got it from. But he slept on a mattress, and I slept on the concrete floor of the cottage on three blankets. We all expected an invasion, but none came. It was all a false alarm. And so we moved back to Wraxall Manor.
Did the civilians remain in the villages?
Oh, yes. Yes, they had to remain there. Yes. I mean, that's all they could do, really. The object of the operation was to stop the Germans getting a foothold on the Chisel Beach. Because don't let them get inland, because you never know what they may do once they've got a foot. And that's what, of course, happened in Normandy. If the invasion force of Normandy had been stopped on the beaches, well, that would have been the end. But they got in, and that was our objective, was to stop them even landing. That's why we were right down on the shingle. Well, not on the shingle, but in the ground into which you could dig posts and positions all along the beach. Well, so we went back. Well, then I think the next day, or perhaps it was the day before, we had a visit from Edward Seago, who was the assistant corps camouflage officer. And I went down. I can't remember whether the brigadier went down too, but I went down to meet him on the Chisel Beach on the front of the 6th Battalion. And he suggested and eventually provided plaster busts, just busts, down to waist level of of a figure of Neville Chamberlain in khaki uniform with a tin hat on and a gas mask. And he suggested that these busts, which he had obtained from Denham Studios, should be put into slit trenches, shallow slit trenches, with a board at the bottom, a black board at the bottom to give depth from the air all along our front. And we were issued eventually with these figures, and they were put in shallow slit trenches. And there Neville Chamberlain gazed out across the channel in khaki uniform, all exactly alike, and it was hoped that these would hoodwink the Germans should they fly overhead. And he also gave us a demonstration of camouflaging a gun. And the gun was above, on the high ground, in the wood, just above the swanery. And it was covered with a netting, and then into which Seago wove dyed horsehair to match the colour of the leaves and the undergrowth in which the gun was hid. It was a magnificent demonstration of camouflage, but I used to think every horsetail in the country had been cut, clipped, to provide the horsehair, and of course it would be impossible to do it all the way along the front. Seago's biography, because he was indeed a well-known artist, and his pictures today are extremely valuable, in his biography he actually refers to these busts and I think refers to the camouflaging of this particular gun. He only did one. I always remember he stood there with his hand in his pocket the whole time, and that was the end. We were issued with his busts. And as a matter of fact, I took a small length of film of the busts and of some soldiers of ours actually holding them, and that's in the Regimental Museum. Well, that was on, I think, about the 6th, and on the 8th or thereabouts, I met Headley, the G3 at Division, and I met also Sir Orme Clarke at Dorchester, who was the legal advisor to the regional commissioner. And I took them all the way along the brigade front. The object of this was to try and for us to try and close, be permitted to close, the approaches to the front, the beaches, because any Tom, Dick and Harry could come down and they get entangled in the wire and they could get blown up on the minefields. Of course, there were minefields behind our positions and, I think they were probably in front of our positions. And were always possible. In fact, I know a bull got into one minefield and was blown up on one occasion. And we set off. I met them at Dorchester, and we set off from Abbotsbury and went all along, motoring, of course, to Lyme Regis, which was the brigade front. And I remember Sir Orme Clarke telling me that he always considered army maps quite useless, and he went on road maps. But the object was to try and persuade the regional commissioner to permit the approaches to the beaches to be closed. Well, all went reasonably well till we got to Lyme Regis, and there we met the town clerk and I suppose the county engineer or the town engineer or the sanitary inspector or somebody like that. And the town clerk was a gentleman dressed in very fine black suiting, but he had brown shoes on. And they were both, these officials were both dead against us being permitted to close the roads in Lyme Regis. They persistently said, how are we going to get the rubbish carts along the seafront if you close it? What is going to happen if we want an ambulance to go along and it's closed, or a fire engine? What happened in the end, or what was the decision of the regional commissioner, I never know, because by the time any decision was made, we'd moved out. But I remember it was I think I had lunch with them. I gave them lunch somewhere in Lyme Regis. But it was a laborious day, taking Sir Orme Clark with his motor maps, and with him the whole way along. The next day, I went with the brigadier to a divisional conference, and we learnt there that the invasion was possible on the 12th, 13th, or 14th. But after the 20th of July, over September, it was less likely on account of the weather. 12th, 13th, and 14th. And on the 10th of September, I went to watch a anti-invasion exercise performed by the 9th DLI, who I think I'm right in saying were in reserve. And at this exercise, the GOC, our old friend General Martel, was out, and there were some armored 30 hundredweight trucks. And they were quite useless. They got stuck. They were far too heavy bodies on a vehicle of that capacity. And I think I'm right in saying General Martel took them away and tested them for safety, whatever you like to call it. The ordinary rifle fire created an eighth impression on the armor. And the anti-tank rifle, which was a pretty useless weapon, went right through. And so they were considered quite useless and never appeared again. They got stuck. They were so heavy. They got stuck in gateways and they got stuck in wet land, and they were absolutely useless. Well, that was on the 10th of September, and then on the 11th of September, Berylinis, the brigade major, returned, and I handed over to him an empty basket, except for the disruption of petrol pumps in the case of an invasion. That was my stint at brigade headquarters. Now, that was on, the 11th of September, according to my notes. And on the 12th of September, bearing in mind the warning we'd had, the 6th DLI headquarters and my headquarter company, I was back then with the battalion, moved out onto the knoll at our battle headquarters, and it started to rain then. And we slept out in our clothes, ready for instant turnout. And we did the same daily till the 20th. And then we went back to our ordinary, we might say, life.
How did you find life over those days out in the...
We rather enjoyed it in a way. What we did, we stood too, and then I think we slept when daylight appeared until about 10 o'clock. We were all allowed to sleep.
What time was stand to?
Well, dawn.
And then you went to sleep after that?
In the morning.
What about getting food to you?
Oh, food all came up from the cookhouses, from Lytton Cheney, the cookhouse in Lytton Cheney, all came up in lorries. I can see them now, the containers, hay boxes they were called, being brought up by the cooks and the staff up to us on the knoll. They had to carry them up the hill, this little hill, and we had our meals out there. And people were very kind to us. The Harpers actually sent us fruit, fruit out to us on the knoll. And we just carried on as headquarters. Most of the holes in the ground, you might say, and the slit trenches and that sort of thing, had been completed. And I think I perhaps have mentioned that one chap actually slept in an enlarged badger set where a badger lived. But we all loved our little holes out there, despite the weather. It was blowing, and you know, the typical September weather by now. The summer was over. And we came back, and then there was a mild flap again on the 22nd, although we were told it was unlikely anything would happen after the 20th. On the 22nd, we went in a leisurely manner back to our little holes on the knoll. Nothing transpired. And of course, it was after that it was impossible because of the September storms, and that it was known that Hitler couldn't just make it.
Headquarters company was on the knoll.
Yes, we were on.
Do you recall where the other companies were?
All along the front, of course. Which right away along. You got this long shingle beach. There was no sand. Let's make it quite clear, there was no sand. It wasn't very wide, the shingle, but it stretched the whole way along from the east of Abbotsbury right to Lyme Regis, practically. And incidentally, the shingle is graded by the sea all the way along, and it was impossible to walk any distance without becoming extremely tired and very difficult to walk on. And the chaps were, you couldn't dig in the shingle, but they were in the field or the rough ground behind the shingle. Behind the shingle, there was, of course, a barbed wire entanglement right on the edge of the shingle, and then a minefield. And behind that were the chaps in the field or in the rough ground, just behind the shingle and the minefield, and all the way along. The 9th Battalion, I think I'm writing, was in reserve at Bridport. But the 6th and the 8th were all the way along. So I know the 6th, the 8th were at Lyme Regis, way along there. Well, we finished our tour of living on the Knoll on the 22nd of September, the end of September. And we did go out there. I called it a mile flap. And we went out leisurely out onto the Knoll, knowing perfectly well the weather was far too bad for any invasion. It was pretty rough seas, and the wind was bad, and it had been raining hard for some time. Well, then, I think one must remember that we had amongst other things on our establishment, we'd formed a tank hunting platoon, and of course it was in readiness behind. The tank hunting platoon was rode bicycles of every push bikes of every form of description, and they had a tiny little van, impressed, a civilian van, in which they carried their Molotov cocktails. A very heavy load, and this little van was almost breaking its springs. And they were ready, of course, to go and chase any tank that had landed and try and catch it way late in the lanes and the highways of Dorset. And that was one thing. And the other thing, too, is that all officers were instructed to learn how to ride motorcycles. Well, I found that particularly difficult. I don't know whether I mentioned it before, but I got into a sidecar with the MTO, Mike Lockhart, who was MTO then, to be shown how to ride one of these bicycles, and how to work the gears and the levers and all the rest. And we drove straight into a stone wall, so I didn't learn very much on how to ride a damn motorcycle. But I did eventually manage to get on one and go very slowly along some of the lanes of Dorset. And I remember trying to pass the padre's wife, who was on a push bike. I never got past her, because I daren't go at any speed on this wretched machine, and I gave it up after that. Now, I was from about now continually being involved in court-martials, and I was sent to, I think, defend a chap called Sergeant Glasper. I can't remember what he did at Bridport. He was in the 9th DLI, and it was quite clear, it was a very fairly conducted court-martial, it was quite clear that the evidence was extremely bad, and I managed to get him off. Now that was, I think, the second court-martial I was involved in, but later I can describe many more that I was involved in, until I got so sick of it, I asked the AAG to, at division, to strike me off the list of any court-martials that he wanted to try and involve me in. Well, on the 25th of September, we retired from the Knoll, and we were informed that on the 30th, we would retire from Lytton Cheney into the hinterland.